This is an interview with Governor Vicatia. This is tape 26, side 2.
Even when they'd ask a question, you knew they had something in mind. So it wasn't a matter that they say, Vic, you ought to do this or you ought to do something. Even when they were asked a question, to me that had some meaning to it. The main difference of the question was. So that's part of listening to it. Now, what I'm saying when I say common voice story, it isn't any one person. I listen to you, I listen to that person, I listen to that one, 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 and then I can kind of ball it up in my mind, but you have to listen. And that becomes what I call the common voice of Oregon. And it's a good way to run the government that says, okay, we're going to run government. My philosophy, this is a representative form of government. I'm there to represent the people. In order to represent the people, you better listen to what the people have to say. Mm-hmm. That's basically what I was saying to myself. Mm-hmm. I also knew that, in detail, that I could not please all of the people. That's just not the nature of humans. Mm-hmm. My wife and I disagree. You know, that's the way things go. That doesn't mean we get a divorce when we disagree. Mm-hmm. We just disagree. Or you already know that. Just as long as you're honest and you work hard at what you're doing and you explain why you're doing whatever you're doing, we may end up by disagreeing. But the fact is we understand each other and respect each other for it. And so that was my theory. And I'd seen the legislature kind of get captured by that building as a legislator. And as a governor, it was even amazed me more to see how quickly they get captured by that building. And so when the speech, I'm trying to say, look, kind of keep in mind there's folks out there. Mm-hmm. Yesterday when I was in Salem, down at the coffee shop, and Ron Blankenbaker was down there, he's the columnist, and I said, you know, it's too bad the legislature can't stand back and look at themselves. You know, they get a different picture of what's going on rather than what they think is going on. And it's very much, again, like Governor Roberts, when she called the special session last November, she said, and this is what the people want. And I'm saying, Governor, who have you been talking to? There's nobody I know has said to me, that's what I want. So they weren't really listening, you know. Again, that's not to be confused with a poll. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, you know, what's the poll say? Well, I'm going to go that direction. It's entirely different than when I'm talking about a poll, because polling may come out differently than what I talk in terms of a common voice. It might come out the same, but it might also come out differently. So it's not a matter of going whichever way the wind's blowing. That's not what happens. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I believe. It's just a matter of, okay, I'm going to represent Oregon. I know my state. I'm getting to know it even better. I know what I think is good for my state. I'm going to aim in that direction.
So. In your campaigns for governor, you really cover a lot of ground in the state, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you had, at this point, there were two campaigns, right? The 74 and the 78.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you covered an extraordinary amount of territory in Oregon and really got to see a cross-section that perhaps nobody really does.
Yeah, we just kept going.
Uh-huh.
And had some good volunteers, and they would fill up the schedule. And I remember Norm Smith was running for, I think, Secretary of State a few years ago. They got down at the Grants Pass, and my chairman was his chairman. So I get down to Grants Pass, and he got in the morning, she hands him the schedule, and he looks at the schedule. I can't do that. You know, he's looking at the schedule. Well, I don't know why not. Governor Tia did this all the time. And that was reported back both by my chairman and by Norm to me. But you know, it was interesting to me to do it. It was worthwhile. I believe very strongly in what I was doing and trying to do. And yeah, I worked hard at it.
Did you ever have the chance or the desire to well, while you were governor, to be sort of inconspicuously into the masses, you know, go to the corner coffee shop, sort of not recognized as governor, and tap into the feelings of the people that way? I mean, do you ever have that opportunity?
Not that, no. I was always admired somebody that was going to go out and interview a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And because that they would talk to different people and they would get some insights that I could never get. But there was no way I could do that, so there's no need to worry about that. What I really yearned for, and particularly maybe the last 4 years, was to take things at a different pace. To go somewhere, not like is a ricochet, just gone, right. You know. Just kind of take it at a little different pace, give it a little more time. Didn't really happen. I have one specific memory, which kind of explains how you find you get kind of tired and you don't really know it. But I was in Madras at the airport. And I can't remember whether I was waiting for somebody to pick me up or I was waiting for a plane to come in. It doesn't make any difference. I was there all by myself at the Madras airport. The mountains were all silhouetted. This is dusk. Jefferson, Mount Washington, Sisters, beautiful evening. Very quiet. No noise, no pandemonium, no, and how wonderful that felt. Mm-hmm. How wonderful that felt. Quiet, beautiful surroundings, just standing there. Mm-hmm. Just standing there. The other thing that's just very interesting, as we talk about the life of a governor, my friends would say to me, well, there's such and such a new restaurant, have you been to it? Mm-hmm. And I'd say, does it have a meeting room? No, then I haven't been to it. And the whole idea that people take for granted, and I do now, you know, of calling up your friends and saying, hey, let's go have dinner.
Right.
That just wasn't anything you did. Mm-hmm. You know, call your, hey, let's go out to dinner tonight. Where are we going to go? Well, we'll go here. Okay, we'll go here. Wherever that happens to be. That just never happened. And I remember how wonderful it was after I left office. My two closest friends, well, let's go over here, what was it? Some Italian restaurant up in Northwest. And I said, isn't this great? We're just going to dinner. So, you know, you're just a different life. But, and you get kind of mixed up. Okay, you're a public servant. Although there's some things I thought should be private. But you were elected, you're a public servant. You got to recognize that that's part of the deal.
Did you have very many meals at home, just with you and Dolores?
Yeah, but not too often. We're usually going somewhere, but yes, we had dinner at home. Uh-huh. And would then sit down and watch television like anybody else would.
Did she require some of that? Hmm? Did Dolores require a certain amount of quality time for just the two of you?
Oh, I'm sure she would, and she did, and she would look forward mm-hmm. to it. Public life is a strain on marriage, mm-hmm. on family life, and there's no question about that. I think it's to Dolores' credit, Pat Straub's credit, Audrey McCall's credit, Antoinette Hatfield's credit. But they just, you know, just hung in there. Mm-hmm. Because it's not easy for a spouse. You've got a different life now than you had that you're used to. And I remember very well, maybe, I don't know, a couple months after we had left office and gone home, and Dolores said, gee, it's nice to be home. And we lived in a very nice house in Salem, but it wasn't our home. Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew at some point we were going to have to leave again. And she was back to our home. Gee, it's nice to be home. I said a lot of things in just a few words.
Mm-hmm. Well, going on to the session. You were in quite the minority in the House, and when you were planning your strategy for the session, did you?
I didn't play to it, if that's what you're asking.
Uh-huh.
I would, again, do what I thought ought to happen in government. And I didn't say, well, gosh, I can't get this through the Senate, or I can't get this through the House, or whatever. I didn't play to it.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell you that I was very, very successful in what I wanted to do. Very successful. The notable exceptions obviously hit the newspapers, but they were rare, and they were not that substantive.
How was it working with Hardy Meyers as Speaker of the House?
Very good.
How was he different from Phil Lang, his predecessor?
Hardy seemed to be more in charge, mm-hmm. in a very nice and quiet way.
Mm-hmm. Phil Lang, and of course, had a lot of problems. With
yeah, the Hornets and all that sort of thing. He did, yes.
And what about with the Majority Leader, Grattan Cairns? Did you have to work very closely with him? Or did you work very closely with him?
Well, we bet. Grant was, still is today, very much of a political animal.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, he was the leader of the Senate. You have to deal with him. And we got along. We didn't have any really bitter fights.
Mm-hmm.
I think he respected the office of governor. But I recognized him. He was entirely different than Hardy. Hardy wasn't really that partisan. Grant was, still is today.
What about Gary Wilhelms as minority leader?
He did a good job. He did a very good job.
Going on into some of the things that you were working on for that session. You had a three-pronged tax relief program. It was referred to as Son of Six,
yeah.
Ballot Measure Six.
Yeah.
That included a 22% rebate on 1978 personal income taxes, and a 12.5% reduction in personal income taxes each year after, and a 1.5% property tax rate to be sent to the voters. It split the rate for business property, a variable tax assessment ratio, and an increase in assessment set at the growth of in personal income. Was this something that you worked out within your own department, within your own branch, or did you work with the legislators on this?
Oh, that was strictly my own.
Uh-huh.
I've been on a tax committee for 20 years, mm-hmm. so this was not a subject that was new to me. I think I did mention to you, hope I didn't. Incidentally, if I did, stop me, because there's no sense of wasting tape on it. I had a discussion about this. We did the budget,
mm-hmm.
and we cut the budget back $600 million. Now, when I say cut it back $600 million, it was estimated that we were going to get, forgotten what the figure was, but it was up to that amount. And then when my budget came, I didn't spend up to that amount. I spent $600 million short of that. That's how we did that. So the question was, what are we going to do with that $600 million? And that's where this plan came out. Actually, part of it was returning money to the taxpayer, part of the $600 million.
Was this $600 million that had been appropriated by the legislature that spend?
No. What we're talking about is this was 1979, so it was the amount of money we expected to get from July 1, 1979, mm-hmm. to June 30th, 1981. So you predict how much money you expect to get.
Right.
And I don't recall, but let me use the figure of we were going to get, let me say $5 million is more mm-hmm. than that. $5 million, no, that doesn't work out. $100 million. Oh, that doesn't work out. Well, that's okay. $100 million. And so most of the governors design their budgets based upon $100 million coming in. I didn't bother myself with that. We had that $100 million coming in, but what do we want to budget? And we came up $6 million short of that. We didn't budget up to the $100 million. We budgeted up to $94 million.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what I mean.
I see.
So when you say cut the budget, it's probably not a good term. It's just we didn't spend all the money we thought we were going to get.
Right.
And we ended up with $600 million in that case. So I'm sitting, I can remember this very well. And Lee Johnson and Lynn Newbery, they wanted to have a chat with me about taxes. They knew I'd been thinking about taxes. So Lynn Newbery got up there and he was explaining his plan at some length. Okay? And Lee Johnson got up, with three of us together, and he's explaining his plan. Okay? And this took maybe 45 minutes or an hour.
Hmm.
And then finally finished, yeah? Okay, we'll do it my way. And I think they still remember that, and they kind of laughed and went, well, okay, that's the way it goes. So, but I dealt with taxes enough that uh-huh. I didn't need to have any study group or anything else. So I was anxious to lower the income tax rate mm-hmm. and knew how things ought to happen. Trying to balance, I had a pretty good sense of how taxes affected people.
Were people surprised that you had a split ratio for businesses, a higher ratio for businesses than?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Being a business yeah. businessman, you were
yeah.
probably yeah. chastised by a lot of other
oh,
businesses.
Oh yes, yeah. But again, you know, I remember we talked about that earlier. Nobody really owned me. I was going to do what I thought was the right thing to do, which mm-hmm. didn't necessarily always make everybody happy. Two mistakes. One of which was to save that $600 million. The other was that once the legislature abandoned my plan altogether and came up with the homeowner rental relief program that they came up with, I should have vetoed that bill. And I didn't. Because we wasted an awful lot of money on that program. Wasted an awful lot of money.
Of course, this is looking back with 2020 hindsight, knowing that you're yeah. that the recession is yeah, right around the corner.
If I were to do things over again, I said no. Would you do anything different? And I told the press no. Probably, if I were to say at all yes, I probably would have looked back and say I should have vetoed that bill.
Mm-hmm.
But I said to myself, well, at the time, now this is the only property tax relief people are going to get, so I suppose I might as well have it. I'm not going to get another one through the legislature, so this is the only. Mm-hmm. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
But we wasted a lot of money on that.
Did you look upon any of the elements in your plan as being weak links in your proposal, or things that would be more controversial, difficult to pass?
Yeah, actually, all of it. The Democrats want to tax the wealthy, and you know, obviously, mine was always a uniform. We're going to give some relief. We're going to give it to everybody. So I wasn't one that was going to pick out wealthy or poor or anything else. I didn't consider any of it as a piece of cake. Any part of it as a piece of cake. It was just my idea of how I thought it ought to happen.
Later on, when we get to the issue of the sales tax, you constantly warn people about the ominous threat of a 1.5% property tax possibility.
Yes.
And that it would be inevitable if something weren't done.
That's right.
And here you're proposing a 1.5% tax rate, property tax rate.
What I'm trying to do really is to control the growth of property taxes, because if we really looked at it, property taxes were really exploding. Mm-hmm. And actually, this homeowner and renter relief program, again, if you look at statistically, made it even explode even faster.
How is that?
Well, you know, if we vote for this, the state's going to send us money, or we're going to get relief for it. So it isn't really going to cost you any extra money. It's one of those things that how people approach the voters to try to get them to vote yes.
Right.
Went up. And it was a matter, I said, okay, property taxes are going to have to go up. The 6%, we always argued about whether it should be 6 or 5 or nothing, you know. I always figured it needed to be some growth. And but to control the growth, that it wasn't going to go clear out of sight, which it had been doing, but to put a damper on it and say, okay, it's going to rise, but it's going to rise at a control rate that at least you and I can plan for it. And that's basically what I was going after.
That was at a time when interest rates were at a record high level, weren't they?
Yeah, well, actually, it got even higher.
Did it?
Because before Carter went out, as you recall, and interest, interest was over 20%, and inflation was at 13%. Inflation, incidentally, helped state government.
How so?
Well, we were actually taxing inflation is what we were doing.
Huh.
You know,
yeah.
Prices were going up, cost of living, salaries were going up, and then for cost of living means how much is 13%? Well, you got to have a 13%. So we were benefiting from it all. We were getting more interest. We were benefiting from it, but at the same time, we were robbing people, particularly those on fixed income, unmercifully robbing them. But you know, when I talk about how you deal with taxes and the way to go about it, for a long time I was promoting a tax credit for personal exemptions. You recall, I'm not sure where it is today, but it was $600 a tax deduction. Tax deductions. And I'd say that's not quite fair, because our rates at that time ran from 4% to, I think, let me say 10. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd been 9.5. Mm-hmm. So if you were at the lower income at the 4%, your $600 was worth $24, because it was 4% of $600. But if you were at the top rate, your $600 was worth $60.
Right.
I said, that's not right. What we ought to do is have a flat credit for everybody. And I was aiming, and I think it finally passed, at that $85 tax credit. So the people at the lower income really got a boost.
Hmm.
The people at the top actually had to come down.
Hmm. In your house cleaning chores as you moved into the governorship, you, by executive order, canceled 70 of the 116 executive orders filed by prior Oregon governors.
Yes.
Maybe you could tell me a little bit about that. That's
it's just a matter of we're going to cancel them all. We're going to look at them all.
Uh-huh.
We'll reinstitute those we think are appropriate and leave the others canceled. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of how are you going to go about business. And we wanted to know within our own administration what executive orders we had. So the best thing to do is a clean house on all of them.
Going back how far?
All the executive orders that are out there. Most of them are straws. Each governor has his own.
Mm-hmm.
And clean them all out, then look at them one at a time, and reinstitute those exactly like they were, those that we thought were appropriate. Leave the other ones dead. It's gone. Mm-hmm. But that was just a matter of our being able to get a handle on what our office was doing. Another thing we did, which undoubtedly will not show up in what you had, Bob Straub had the governor's office budget, as I did, as all governors do. But then what he would have is that, let's say, he would have somebody on his staff that was in the Department of Transportation budget, or on his staff that was on the human resource budget, somebody in his office. We cut all that out. We're going to show what the governor's office is and let each budget show its own, instead of, oh, well, this won't show in my budget, kind of thing. We cut all that out, too.
And you placed a lot of things under sunset clauses, too, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was a part of your placing limits on on government. Was there objection to any of the things that you canceled?
Not in any large measure, no.
So they were basically things that were fairly ineffective and or non-functional?
Basically,
And there wasn't, so there wasn't any adverse reaction then by either the people on the, involved in those groups? Or
well, there may have been some, but it was not a whirlwind of any kind.
You also were involved in grouping the state's energy-related activities into a compact, efficient, and effective program. That was a priority of yours for this session, or just was this something that you saw as a long-term?
I wanted a long-term kind of thing.
What were the elements of your program?
Now we're into energy.
Well, there were a number of bills and.
The first thing that I wanted to do is get some rational planning for future energy. What we really had at that time was a state agency that was planning what they thought were the needs for energy, which were at odds with the investor-owned utilities. And so the investor-owned would have a large number of what they thought would be the growth and the need for energy, and the state would have a different figure, and we were at odds. And what that did, were, of course, relate as to what they were going to plan. Another dam, a nuclear power plant, a coal fire plant, you know, whatever they were going to plan. And what really were going to be the needs of the state. So I wanted to make more of an understanding, and the state would be more of a partner in this planning process. That doesn't necessarily mean agreed with the investor owns, but more of a partner rather than an adversary. So that at least there was a dependable, good, solid figure as to what the future needs might be. That was one element of what I was trying to achieve. And I also became aware, because of course the energy crisis, but there's still a matter of this conservation, and you recall part of the program that I proposed to the legislature, and they did fund, was this Alternative Energy Task Force, which I finally appointed. And all the time I'd been in the legislature, people would say, don't use nuclear, do wind. Don't use dams, use tide. And, you know, all these. And so I said, we've got to sit down and figure out what all this means, instead of being just kind of flippant about it. Use tide, use wind, all of these different alternatives. Use those instead. Now, I said, let's figure out. So the Alternative Energy Task Force, my charge to them was, look at all the alternatives for renewable resource. And I want to know with how soon can we get them, how much it's going to cost, what are the barriers to this happening, whether it's legislative or political or whatever reason. And I would tell you that was the next session they reported. It is still one of the finest studies that I think I've ever seen. And it goes on to list it. And we had about 400 people apply for it, and I think we had 80 number. We had different subcommittees, and then the committee.